in the limelight.
When the heads of state of 14 nations sat down together in late 2018 to discuss the grim condition of the world's oceans, there was no certainty that anything consequential would result. The leaders planned 14 gatherings, but met only twice before the pandemic upended their talks. So when the group announced recently the world's most far-reaching pact to protect and sustain ocean health, it signaled a bit more than a noteworthy achievement in a complicated time. The agreement negotiated by the nuance-free tool of video conferencing also offered hope of a renewed era of global accord on climate, where issues grounded in science might finally trump political posturing. Stay with us for an article written by Laura Parker, an expert in climate change and marine environment. The piece is titled, In Rare Show of Solidarity, 14 Key Nations Commit to Protect Oceans. Overall, the 14 leaders agreed to sustainably manage 100% of the oceans under their national jurisdictions by 2025, an area of ocean roughly the size of Africa. Additionally, they vowed to set aside 30% of the seas as marine protected areas by 2030, in keeping with the United Nations campaign known as 30 by 30. Both of those large commitments, the leaders said, will help end overfishing and illegal fishing, rebuild declining fish stocks, halt the flow of plastic waste into the seas, and clean up dead zones created by runoff from the farm waste. Nancy Norton, a marine scientist emeritus at the Smithsonian Institution, who was not involved in the project, says, "What I find really interesting is that 14 nations spent the last 2 years talking to each other in an experiment you'd like to see more of in the future. They are working together as a team, starting with countries on the same page, provides the mechanism for actually achieving success. The 14 members are Australia, Canada, Chile, Ghana, Indonesia, Japan, Kenya, Mexico, Namibia, Norway, Portugal, and the island nations of Fiji, Jamaica, and Palau. Combined, they represent 40% of the world's coastlines, 30% of the offshore exclusive economic zones, 20% of the world's fisheries, and 20% of the world's shipping fleet." Vidar Helgason, Norway's former Minister of Climate and Environment and a driving force behind the project, says, "Negotiations with that category of country isn't all that easy. We decided to get a group where high politics wouldn't get in the way and we could be focused on the task." The idea, Vidar Helgason says, was to gather a coalition of the willing, a like-minded group of countries with the ocean deeply embedded in their culture and history, to conduct discussions that would be underpinned by science. Consequently, the high-level panel for a sustainable ocean economy includes nations large and small, rich and poor, spread across all ocean basins. All are economically dependent to various degrees on the seas and oceans. The 14 leaders are now inviting other nations to join the effort. The effort was backed up by a team of 253 scientists that conducted new ocean research and published 16 authoritative papers on topics ranging from an assessment of stemming the flow of plastic waste to combating climate change. The members of the high-level panel also were willing to turn conventional thinking on its ear. Instead of considering the ocean as merely a victim of climate change, which it undoubtedly is, at its both warming and acidifying, the leaders say the seas should be harnessed to become part of the global solution. The key to that is to take an all-in approach, sustainably managing 100% of the oceans, not just the protected areas. Properly managed, the panel says, the ocean economy, including fishing, can expand. Additionally, actions such as restoration of mangroves, kelp beds, and seagrasses that absorb carbon could help offset global emissions by as much as a fifth and help hold global warming to 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit or 1.5 degrees Celsius, the leaders say. Jane Lubchenco, who co-chaired the high-level panel's expert committee, says, "We have acted as if we had to choose between protecting the ocean or using it. That's a false choice. We're discovering smarter ways to use the ocean without using it up. The secret lies in protecting the health of the ocean ecosystems." She says the solutions offered by the panel could generate 40 times more renewable energy through development of offshore wind energy production and wave and tidal power, and lift millions of people out of poverty. The panel's economists forecast that every $1 spent invested in a sustainable ocean would return $5 in economic, social, and environmental benefits. The solutions involve a range of 74 actions, some already in progress. New technologies, for example, enabled Ghana to track foreign fishing vessels lurking off its coast and crack down on illegal fishing, while the panel's call for investment in sewage and waste management infrastructure to curb the flow of plastic waste into the seas is prohibitively expensive and unlikely to happen on a large scale in the coming decades. Many developing nations have banned various single-use plastic products, and others are deploying catchment systems on major rivers in Thailand, for example, also in Vietnam and Indonesia, to capture plastic waste before it is disgorged into the seas. If the approach sounds to some like just another blue ribbon exercise in futility, the leaders say the time for small steps has passed. The ocean, which covers 70% of the globe and produces more than half of the oxygen on Earth, has reached such a dire point of decline that more drastic action is needed now. The world's decade-long inability to rebuild dwindling fish stocks to feed a growing world population offers a timeline that strikingly illustrates the point. Fishing reached peak catch in the mid-1990s, marking the beginning of a long decline. The United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change warned in a special 2019 report on fragile ocean health that without action, fish could decrease by 25% by 2100. Enric Sala, a marine scientist and National Geographic explorer in residence, says, "No way is applying more effort to fishing going to get us more fish. Likewise, setting aside small slivers of ocean for protection, just 7% of the seas are designated marine protected areas, will not restore ocean health. Even 30% is not considered enough." At the same time, the phrase sustainably manage is such a broad, elusive term that it opens the door wide for scepticism. Daniel Pawley, a world-renowned fisheries expert at the University of British Columbia in Canada, who was not associated with the project, praised the effort, but he remains dubious of the notion that the term sustainably manage has any meaningful impact. Daniel Pauly says most of the public doesn't know that sustainable doesn't mean abundant. You can sustain any level, including low levels. You can sustain a stock that is overfished. On the other hand, less skeptics dismiss the idea that just 14 of the world's 192 coastal nations could make an impact. Consider that Japan, a powerful influence in the Asia-Pacific, signed onto the agreement to set aside 30% of the oceans in marine protected areas. The fact that Japan, which has long signaled reluctance to create protected areas, has changed course is a big deal, according to Sala. Now, when the United Nations meets next year in China to continue work on a global marine protection treaty that still eludes adoption, having Japan on board in support of marine protected areas may ease the way for other nations to reconsider.